Hey, this is Carrie from Wrap Your Head Around Silks. This is Expecting Ariel's podcast, now with the Digitent Network, and we have our co-host Bean here. Go ahead, Bean. Say hi to the listeners.
Hi.
What would you like to say? That's it? Would you like to say thanks for joining us today?
Thank you.
Okay, can I do it now? Can I do it now? Okay. So thank you so much for joining us today. Before we get started, wrap your head around silks. Hey, you can't sing while I'm doing this. Just stop wiggling. roll it out. We hit the mat every Monday and Thursday evening. We have Ariel Rehab. We have a beginner to intermediate full course and then a free mini course. Don't breathe on me. The mic is going to pick it up. Can you be still?
Okay.
Okay, fine. Today we have Anika Sagi. You know what? Before we get off the phone, I did not ask her how to pronounce her name correctly. So I don't want to butcher it even more. I'm going to just continue. She is the owner of Nin Yoga in Sydney, Australia. And we were going to talk about prenatal yoga, but then the conversation kind of took this amazing turn towards what it's like, how to open, market, run a studio, plus, you know, with two small children, 5 and 1 years old. So I'm so excited for you guys to meet her. Let's get started. If you would introduce yourself to your audience, if you would tell us a little bit about where you live, your practice, Ariel, and yoga, a little bit about your family, and then I'll jump in.
Okay, like, so just like an elevator pitch or like a full thing?
Whatever you want.
Okay, cool beans.
Whatever you want. I love that you just said cool beans. It's awesome.
Oh, thanks. Okay. Hi, my name is Anika. I am a mama of two girls, Maya and Nara, 1 year old and 5 years old. I also have two yoga studios at the moment. There was at one point I had 5. And before yoga, I did a whole lot of pole and aerial, and it was my life and my everything for quite a few years. Started teaching it, wanted to offer the students something different. Had to choose between yoga or Pilates, but decided with yoga because that meant you get to go to India and that's cool. And then here we are today.
I love that that's your reason.
Yeah.
Anika.
Yeah. Look, I don't even know. It's just call me. It's like that.
Anika,
yeah.
You sound like from that intro that you've had 9 lives. Do you feel that way?
Yes.
Because I feel the same way. Because I'm a dancer. Once a dancer, always a dancer. But like, mm-hmm. I had a whole career and now I'm doing something else. And so there's just all these chapters of my life that fit into boxes in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like it's somewhere, you know, like you were fully immersed in one world and then you departed and then you started another project. And I feel like owning a studio itself, regardless of what kind of studio it is, it's a chapter. You used to have 5 studios.
Yeah, that was, am I allowed to swear?
Oh, yes.
I don't recommend anyone having 5 studios. Like, it's fucked up. I did it because at the time, to be completely honest, like opening studios is a fun and creative process. It's exciting, right? Like building it, decorating it, making the schedule, hiring new teachers, thinking of the classes, like all of that. It's fun and it's exciting. But also, I kind of work in a way, and I'm trying to change this habit, but I work in a way where I run my business through feeling, like what feels like would work. And unfortunately, sometimes you need to not run by feeling, you need to run by numbers, like looking at actual data. And, you know, everything was going great and it felt like at the time I had the money to do all that, but then suddenly, like, you know, a pandemic and then compounding happens and then it's just like, fuck, I've got like 5 commercial leases to pay. That's
Oh my
why.
God. Okay. So the one thing I was thinking while you're saying that, like the creative process of starting a studio is so exciting to you.
Yes.
I think that for somebody else, it might be literally their worst nightmare.
Oh.
All the things that you just said.
I would like to live,
Not.
and nightmare is my dream.
I mean, you know, that's the thing. Some if you own a studio, you kind of have to feel that way about it because it's, you know, somebody asked me recently, you know, like, oh, should I be a content creator? Should I be like what you're doing? And I was like, do you really love creating content and then writing emails? Because that's what you'll be doing most of the time. And she's like, thank you for this conversation. No, thank you. Because there's the nuts and bolts, you kind of have to enjoy the nuts and bolts of it. Yeah.
It's definitely not for everyone. Content creation or studio ownership, and it's just how it rolls. And but it comes naturally to us, and for us, it's easy. Sometimes too easy, and then we put too much on our plate, and we're like, "Shit, what have I done? Like, I'm gonna burn out," you know. So this is a constant test of myself. But I've made a promise to myself, especially after having my second, that I'm not going to open any more studios. Like, I'm just, and opportunities have arisen. Like, as soon as I made that promise to myself, like, people be like, "Hey, Enika, I want to partner and do this or that," and you know, all these exciting things I would usually say yes to, and then now I'm just like, you know what? No, because I miss a lot of my first daughter growing up, having five studios and having Maya. I don't want to do that to my second. And that's something I constantly remind myself of every single day. But the most
Anika,
loving.
how old are you right now?
I turn 35 next month.
Wow, so you were like a business owner at the age of like 29.
I've had studio, this is my 7th year. So what, but before that, I was an independent contractor, which kind of starts the business process, right? Like, I'm sure aerial teachers, yoga teachers, all that, they're independent contractors to begin with.
Your business is called Nin Yoga. You're in Australia. So did you just have like five nin yogas around the country or?
I had four Nin Yogas in Western Sydney and one studio called Maya Movement, which was actually two buildings. That was only like aerial yoga, Lyra, bar Pilates, calisthenics, and weightlifting vibe. So completely separate to yoga, but the members could still go there.
Got it. Oh, you have a membership base. That makes sense. And so when you say that opportunities have come up, do other cities just want a Nin Yoga, basically?
Well, it's just. I don't know if other cities want a Nin Yoga, but I do often get asked for my brain to be, you know, picked at to help open something. And whether that be in a partnership with someone or just giving them advice. And I do actually really enjoy it. And I'm always happy to do it because it sort of gives me my fix to help them as much as I can, but also to tell them everything that I wish someone else told me. So creating your own brand. So Nin Yoga is not a franchise. Nin Yoga is literally my high school name. Like, doing that on your own, you make a lot of mistakes, like really expensive mistakes. And I really want to share what those really expensive mistakes are to other people so they don't end up in the same place I did as well. And continue to get like, and like know what they're heading into pretty much. Yeah, because they're people I care about a lot of the time.
So you're like a fitness brand studio consultant.
No, I think consultants get paid. I don't ask for anything. I just like talking about it and being like, I like knowing what's going on, and I'm just like a business nerd. I had like not a lot of people know this. I don't talk about it very often, or maybe I do talk about it very often, I don't realize, but I really love like business stuff. Like, I spend all my free time reading business books, which like, if you told me that 10 years ago, I would be like, why? That's so lame. But now I just find it so exciting, like, especially marketing, which is so weird because I never got into this industry to learn about marketing, but I just find it so bloody interesting. And there's just, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it doesn't matter what the topic or the center of your business is. Like for me, it's aerial. For you, it's yoga right now. You, at the end, you become a marketing person.
If you can't sell, you're not a business. unfortunately, like you can't. And to be able to sell, you need to be smart. Like say email marketing, right? You need to like tag people properly, and you need to know, remind people like, what is it, like 13 times before they acknowledge that you even exist, like, or that they want to go to an event they actually do want to go to. You need to remind them again and again and again. You need to sell them something in under three clicks, otherwise they get distracted. Like there's all these little things, you know, that we need to know as businesses.
Oh my God. You remind me so much of Rachel Bowman, actually.
Okay. I'll look her up.
You really do, because she is, well, when I first got on the call with Anika, I was like, wait, do you know Rachel? Because Rachel's an Aussie. And she lives here in LA now. She owns Womack and Bowman, which is the studio that I teach at.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And they do silks, right? And they've got like an awesome Instagram follow. Yes, I do. I know this thing. Continue.
Yeah. And Rachel's the same. Like she's kind of been my mentor over the years for marketing and for like brand building and all that stuff. She is so energized by it as well. I don't know if I'm as energized about it as you guys seem to be. But I think it makes sense. It's no matter what the business is, if you're not kind of going on all cylinders with those things in mind, you know, it's really hard to be successful. You had an aerial studio / fitness studio. Why did you decide to go for the yoga instead?
So the first studio I did ever have was yoga. And then in, I think, 2020, I decided, after having my first and her growing up a little bit, I was like getting my identity back again. And I was like, oh, you know what I used to do a lot that I really loved? Freaking aerials. Like I loved it so much. I would spend, you know, like I would go to train like 4 or 5 times a week. So I was like, I want to bring this to my hometown, so Western Sydney. So the building next door to my yoga studio freed up, and it was a huge building. It was actually 2 buildings next to each other, and both of them freed up. So I just, you know, took a massive risk, which business is only risks and only experimentation, and signed a 3-year lease. And then from there, I found a builder who was able to build me a custom rig so that I could teach Lyra and aerial yoga out of there in one of the buildings. And even though it was a low ceiling, so I think the ceiling was 4 meters, which is low for aerial, right? That was perfect for us because everyone was very new to it all. And I always had the intention over time that, you know, we will grow our membership base. And then once the 3-year lease was up, I would move to a warehouse with like proper steel beams. And that's like always the goal, right? But then as I started to open this, as I started to have this studio, and we did start and we broke even right away. I don't know. I started to notice, this is from my own experience, I can't speak for everyone else's experience, that it was a little bit of a flawed system business-wise. Just
your system was flawed.
I just think the boutique fitness industry system is flawed.
Ah. Yeah. Okay, explain. Why do you think that?
Because how much we're meant to pay our teachers per hour, and you want to pay them good, right? That's something I always told myself. As soon as I had a studio, I want to pay my teachers at least the industry standard, never lower. And, you know, give them all the loadings and superannuation, everything they need, right? I always want to do that first. And then you got to pay rent, which is like this huge cost. And then you got to like, so you have those 2 costs, and then you're charging a membership. And it can't be too expensive because people need to be able to afford it, but also it can't be too cheap. And then from there, like, I don't know, the numbers don't add up, right? Whereas in a yoga studio, and this is getting very businessy now, in a yoga studio setting, you can do, like, I've written my own yoga teacher training, and that helped a lot. So I could still pay all my teachers fairly and have all the classes. Hello there. But yeah, so it's hard. And also aerials is very niche. If you didn't know already, I'm sure you do. It's very niche and it's hard and it hurts.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the obvious. It's like, plus with aerial classes, you can't have that many students in a class. Whereas a yoga class, you could pack it.
Exactly. For Lyra, we would have
Totally different.
two to a Lyra. And of course, the insurance is higher and the cost of all the stuff is, and the teachers are harder to come by as well. Whereas with yoga, you can have more in a class, only need a mat, and there's heaps of teachers. And then also, another huge reason why I closed it down is that I was speaking to two different markets, and that was really confusing for my marketing and for this the brand's voice, like to speak to aerialists and then speak to yoga students, which is actually completely different. So I just had to pick one voice, and I just stuck with yoga because I dig it. I dig both, but I dig yoga more, and I was just serving more people for sure.
The aerial studio is so niche. Like yoga, every single walk of life can walk in, and every single walk of life can walk into an aerial studio too, but oftentimes they don't, right?
Oftentimes they don't, and especially where I'm from in Western Sydney, like I would put the lira literally like just off the floor, and still that, like even them just sitting on the bar, it's just too painful, you know. And then with aerial yoga, like aerial hammock, a lot of people will be getting vertigo, or they'll be coming out the sling too fast, and you know, they have weak ankles and then sprain an ankle. Like it was just like there was just so much more risk. And I was stressed. I was like, this one time in a kid's class, like a kid got hit in the head with lira and had to go to hospital. And I was like, this is stressful. Like, I just want to teach people to breathe. Like, that's good for my nervous system too. And
Yeah.
they just stuck with that.
Okay, so what I'm thinking is, how the heck did you get the money together to start your first place?
Good. Yeah, this is a good question.
Yeah.
So start the yoga studio, or we're going with aerial.
Yeah, whatever the studio was, like how did you even start? Like there's women out there who are thinking about this,
Yeah,
right?
definitely. So I would always recommend to start really small. So I started with the yoga studio, and how I started was actually hiring out the local community hall for $24 an hour for 3 hours every Wednesday. So I just had that cost, and I used to bring all my props in and then just set it up as needed, make it beautiful, give tea, bolsters, incense, and then almost make it like a yoga studio, and then pack away again. And then once that grew and all those classes were booked out, I was like, okay, maybe I can afford a commercial lease now. I didn't know anything about commercial leasing. I found a studio very close by that was really cheap rent, only $320 a week at the time, which is very cheap for a commercial lease here in Sydney. And I opened that studio with $5,000. And that $5,000 literally went to buying yoga bolsters and putting the floor down. And that's all I needed to start, right? So very simple. And then from there, as you gain members is really important because that's reoccurring revenue. You can't rely on casual class passes off your best friends. Once you have a membership base going, then you can, you know, start to add more things. And yeah, I kept doing that, and I kept having more studios, and the membership kept growing. And then I had enough money to open my movement, which I think my movement at the time cost me, and I'm being super transparent right now, is like $60,000. So, and that's cheap for an aerial studio, right? So my rig cost me like, I think just like 20 grand. The rig, that's the most expensive part. And then there's the floors and the equipment. And then the bond. Bond is always a really big one.
Yeah, so 60,000. I mean, I can imagine for a studio in Los Angeles. Oh my God, I don't even know what they spent.
It'll be what, like, and this was a small studio, like 80 square meters, 4 meter ceilings. Like, this is tiny. Like that is, yeah. Aerial studio, especially if you start getting steel beams in and pulley systems, way, way, way much more big investment. But my biggest regret, like not a regret, but something I learned from that time is that I didn't do enough market research. I didn't actually like check that people were keen to come and keep coming. What's interesting about aerials is that people are actually okay, and I should have known because I do this myself, to travel far for it, you know, and like go to like a bigger studio that has like the full length
Yes.
fusu and stuff like that. Yeah, definitely. They're happy to because it's their thing. It's their what makes them special. It's their niche.
So saying that if you had done that research, finish the sentence. If you had done that research, then
I think if I just, I'm a very impulsive person, and this has worked in my favor a lot of times in business, because this is how everyone learns in business, by failing over and over again. That's what we have to do constantly, is fail. So yeah, that was just me getting a little bit too excited at the time. And actually, it's something that I wanted to do. And I think if I never opened my movement, I still to this day would be like, I'm going to open an aerial studio. And then I'll still be looking on like commercialrealestate.com and like organizing it and like manifesting it, right? But I had the opportunity to do it then, and I did it. And then I learned the lesson. I was like, okay, that's wasn't for me at this time of my life. Maybe someone else. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So going back to the question, was the advice to, I mean, I would assume the advice is to start to build a clientele and community before you get a lease, basically.
Yeah, I think so. I think if you're, which I did for yoga, and because I did that for yoga, it was really easy for me to grow that business, but I didn't do it for long enough for aerials in my area. So I think, yeah, if you're an independent contractor, I assume that's what they are in America as well, independent contractors, like aerial teachers. Yeah, just build your client through that, teach lots of different studios, and just like, just chat to your students, see what they want. You can even like, you know, just create a landing page on a website and be like, we're thinking of doing something exciting. Join the wait list if you're interested in a yoga studio in an aerial studio in Los Angeles, and then see how many people join your waiting list first before you even go look out for a commercial property. You know what I mean? So doing that kind of
stuff. Yeah, it's tricky, I think some people might say, because it's not like if you are in a town where there's no aerial, it's hard. It might be a little bit harder for, you know, teach a private here and there and get people excited. It would just be that digital field. Mm. But even still, that digital space is great now. Mm-hmm. And it's not, and it can do a lot more than it used to. You know, it's like, for me, it's like my business is digital. I don't have a brick and mortar. Everything I do is digital. It's, you know, I have a course, I have this, I have that. And so that, for me, it's like you do that and then you get the brick and mortar would be really helpful, because even with Womack and Bowman, they were already a name before their studio was even open. You know, and that is a huge thing. Mm-hmm. So how do you exactly balance owning three studios and having two small children? How does that work?
I don't know. Can you tell? Let me know when you figure it out.
Well, you have a one-year-old, right?
Yeah, she's one, and she didn't bloody sleep last night, though. She's so annoying.
Are you... I mean, I remember the first year of my daughter's life. I don't know if I could have done all. I mean, I guess if you have no choice, but yeah, how do you do this?
Yeah. When you have no choice, your capacity grows. You know, like one child is hard, then people have two, three, four, and then the same with studios. They have one studio and it's hard, then they have two, three, four, five. Like it's, your capacity just continues to grow, really, out of necessity. How I do it, and I'm always mindful when I say this, but I do have, like, their dad is really great. He's really helpful, and he's like not just a dude that's their dad. He is like a co-parent, and he shares half, if not more, of the load. So I'm always really thankful for that. Without him, I would not be able to do all of this. And what else? I just have some boundaries, I guess. You have to put boundaries in place, you know.
Such as?
I used to teach a lot, like heaps, right? Because the students love my classes. I love to teach, and it was fun being here. But when I teach lots, then I can't work on the business lots, which means that for me to work on the business, I have to spend less time with my children, which I don't want to do. So I cut out teaching so I can during the day just work on the business, which takes a lot of work, and then go home at night. Peak time for the studio is, of course, like 6 p.m. onwards. That's people working 9 to 5. And it was really hard for me for a long time to just put that boundary in place for me to be like, no, you have to hire other teachers and hire receptionists and have other people holding the fort for you because you're not allowed to be at the studio. And I used to like always make excuses. I'd be like, I just got to go drop off the laundry, or I just got to go give Jackie her new shirt, or like just a reason to go to the studios at night. But now I do none of that. And even if like a class needs a cover, and if any of my community is listening to this, I'm sorry, but like sometimes if the class needs a cover, usually I would be like straight there, I'll cover the class, you know, and it'll be awesome. But then sometimes I just need to cancel it. I'll be like, no, I haven't seen my children all day. I need to be here. So that was really hard for me, and actually took me, I'm still learning this now. It's taken me a few years for sure. That's the biggest one.
Yeah, I can imagine. The woman I was talking about, Rachel, also they used to teach all the classes themselves.
Yes, you have to. You like, because
Yeah.
wage is so huge. It's the biggest cost. Yeah. So teaching all the classes yourself is a great way to like, you know, save on costs and make your business profitable, but then you burn out, then you're not feeling creative anymore, and you just end up teaching the same shit all the time. And then you're not feeling like you can grow your business either. And you're just like burnt out constantly. So it's weird. I thought when I opened studios that me as a studio owner meant that I had to be the most senior teacher. That's something I told myself. And that's not the case at all. Actually, everyone I hire needs to be better than me. Every single person.
Oh,
Yeah, for
I
sure.
love that.
Yeah, no, that's how you're going to make a cool business. Everyone needs to be better than you. If you're the best person, you're not going to learn nothing.
Yeah, and then you train people too, right? Are you do you do the teacher training at your studio?
I am one of the teachers on the teacher training, but there's eight teachers on our yoga teacher training, and all of them are way more experienced than me. I only have a decade's experience. They have like 20 years plus, all of them. So, yeah.
How many employees do you have right now?
So I run completely on independent contractors and VAs.
Okay.
So
Okay.
off the top of my head, I think I have like 12 teachers, two receptionists, and two VAs.
And that's across two, and that's across two studios. Sorry, three studios.
I have two studios, two yoga studios.
And are they close to each other? Like
Yeah,
if you have to
they're
drive
like
from
a
one to the other?
15 to 20 minute drive away from each other. So they're actually quite close. So, and our membership can go to both studios. So students are often bouncing between both. And that's a model that I've always done. Like when we had five studios, the member can go to all five studios and they're all like in Sydney. I kind of dig that, but it also has its flaw in the sense like you're competing against yourself.
Yeah, okay. What is so you wake up, it's like a Tuesday. What's the day?
Okay. Well, yesterday was Tuesday. What did I do yesterday? I like, if I can, and this is not another boundary that I've put in place that has been a bit hard for me to upkeep as of late, but I usually do a 9:30 a.m. class at another studio, not at my own studio. So I go to a completely different studio, and I have to do that because doing class
Ah.
at my own studio is feels like I go into work mode, and I want to go to another studio where someone else does all the things,
Right.
tells me everything, and I just like turn my brain off. So all morning I spend with my girls, and then once they get to school, then like I do a 9:30 class because I still like fitness and exercise and doing all those things. I think that's important. And then I would usually come into the office. So I'm at the office here now, which is like the art studio, which is connected to the one of my yoga studios, Penrith. And I just like work from the computer. Right now I'm integrating like automated marketing throughout my whole studio, which is really hard and a huge learning curve for me. I'm also about to launch my next yoga teacher training, so creating all the copy and email sequencing and retagging for that. We're still like collecting feedback forms. I just had a yoga festival, so still putting that all that together so we can run a better yoga festival next year. And sometimes I teach like a midday class, so it's like 45 minutes, and then I go home. And I try and be home for my daughter when she finishes school at 3 o'clock. Don't always make it, but sometimes I do.
Wow, you're fitting, you know, I we were talking to a me and I have another podcast called Greener Grass. And we were talking to the woman CEO of a underwear brand.
Cool.
Yeah, and basically it was a clean underwear brand, like no toxicity, all that stuff. And basically, when she took on the job, she told the owner of, you know, the owner of the brand that she would only work when her kids were in school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this man was like, what? You won't even, there's no 9 to 5. It's a 9 to 3.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, trust me, I'm a mom. I will get more done between 9 and 3 than anyone on the planet.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, just like the amount of efficiency.
Mm-hmm.
So the one-year-old, is the one-year-old in daycare as well?
Yeah, like she's school in daycare, slash daycare. Yeah, so she's in daycare 4 days a week, which is really helpful. That only started not long ago. Before that, she was in less. But now that Maya has started school, she started kindergarten. We put Nara in 4 days a week so that like my partner and I both have some flow, because he's also like self-employed too. So. And so we just have time to like, you know, just do shit we want. That means I get to go to like a 9:30 class and just take it easy sometimes, because I don't know if you ever tried to run a business with a baby in your arm. It's a bit sucky. It's hard.
So I've been doing this podcast now for 3.5 years, and so she was on my boobs for a lot of the recording. So
yes, yeah, it's hard. It's so hard. It's hard, and
it's
I have
so
a lot
hard.
Of respect for that. Like Maya and Nara both opened a lot of studios with me, but also if we don't have to do that, that's nice too. And sometimes we get so used to doing things the hardest way possible, because that's all we know, and that's because we think that gives us value, because we do something like the hardest way possible. But if there's an easier way, like, I'm starting to learn to take that way too.
I love that answer. If there's an easier way, let's take it. Hey. This one just started preschooled in January.
Wow.
But because what happens the first time you go to school is you get sick all the time.
Oh, yes. Still got to pay though,
so
right?
Oh, just paying all the money.
Yeah.
All the money.
With a disease.
All the games.
Listen. I don't make enough money to get you a new game every day, okay? So, yeah. So, basically, every other week, she's home with me sick. So, like, I was, like, had all these daydreams of, like, going back to teach Pilates. Because I had, like, the 3 hours, 3 days a week. And then I was like, what am I talking about? I'm going to be picking her up early every other day because she's got sniffles and her stomach's hurting. But it's okay. We're learning.
Finish up. I think it took, like, isn't it, like, the first 6 to 8 months? It's something, like, really ridiculous. Like, but after that, it gets a little better, apparently.
I mean, I hope.
Yeah.
Okay, so. Anika, if you were to give advice out there to, I mean, I feel like what you're talking about is any business within kind of these parameters. Like, what you're talking about and my digital business, a lot of things you're talking about seem, like, resonate with me, like it's very similar. Like just the time that it took for me to learn how to create a website, the time that it took for me to figure out how to do e-commerce on my own website, it's just like my brain melted.
Yes.
Do you have any advice for those out there who are either in it or want to do it, and like what's the reality of the day-to-day issues that you have and what that you're learning, stuff like that, like advice for people?
Okay.
I think one thing that I'm continually working on within myself is learning how to focus. Focus is hard, and there's so much distractions out there. And for my work style anyway, like I have to find a flow first. So if I constantly get distracted, I need to remove those distractions. So that's why I used to have this office at home that was much more convenient time-wise, but instead I drive 15, 20 minutes to come to this office and do my work here because there's less distractions here. When I was at home, I would like empty the dishwasher and then sort out the socks and then just like go get something out of the fridge, whereas when I'm here in this office, like I can't do any of that. That stuff will still be there waiting for my partner and I when we get home, but that was a huge distraction, and I always like use that as a way to, you know, be like, oh, but I got to do this because it's going to help the family, you know, when they come home, they'll have a clean house or dinner prepped. But yeah, it will also help the family for me to get all my work done and grow this business, you know, so we can pay off our mortgage. And my time is best used, like this brain needs to be focusing on this business and these hours. And then when I get home, I turn that off and just like focus on the kids. So it's been like, yeah, distraction has been a big one for me. Like just recently, I think yesterday or the day before, I removed all the social media like apps like off my phone. Like they're still there because I use them for work, but they're really hard to get to. Just because like that was becoming a huge distraction as well. I even put like a blocker on Instagram, so every time I open it, it takes 12 seconds to open to remind myself, be like, do you actually want to go on Instagram, or are you just doing?
Oh my God. And this is not your personal Instagram. You're talking about, is your personal and your business Instagram the same?
I have both. I never log into my personal anymore just because this is for my business one. Because your business one
Yes.
becomes you doom scrolling also.
Yes.
Let's be real. And we're seeing
Oh,
it's engagement,
okay.
but yeah.
Pink and green.
Do you feel like, I mean, we're all addicted, but do you feel like,
For a birthday.
do you feel like it's like something that you're thinking about all the time? Like how many, like the comments and blah, blah, blah.
Vanity metrics.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like we all suffer from it.
Yeah. I do think about it too much. And then when I'm doom scrolling and I see something that triggers me, I think about that even after I'm off my phone, and that's annoying. So I just have to, I put in my Google Calendar to like allocate like 30 minutes of when I make my post for the day, do a little bit of engagement, and then I come off it after that. And so I schedule the time. So it's intentional rather than just like doing it whenever. I had to be that strict on myself because it's just time goes so fast when you're scrolling. It like disappears.
Yeah, I feel like so I interviewed Jill Franklin. I don't know how much you know about like the aerial
Know
world
that name
anymore.
too.
Yeah,
Yeah, she wrote a book,
Aerophysique.
right?
Yeah. She's been around for a while now. She's been really at it, and she's so consistent. And I did a, you know, when I did this with her, I totally asked her about her business because she's so dialed in. You seem the same. Like you have your boundaries, like the boundary that she helped set for me. She didn't realize this, but like after I interviewed her, she does 5 days a week of posting, Monday through Wednesday, Monday through Friday. She does not post on the weekends. She never not posts 5 days a week. Like I'm impressed. I'm like, because it's not just the posting, it's the creating the content. And depending on who you are, what you have at your disposal, it's kind of hard to create the content sometimes. Like I have to, I'm a teacher at a studio. I don't own my own studio right now. So for me to create 5 days of content, I have to figure out when to do it. And then I have my kid. You know, that got really challenging. So she was like, yep. And then I asked her, how many times do you film yourself doing this aerial sequence before you're posting it? Because like I could do it a dozen times and not be happy. And so she says six. If it's not there in six, that's it. And I'm like, oh my God. And she's not even a mom yet. Did you just drop that in my drink?
Get some
Bean.
drink.
Sorry,
I'm gonna have to get it out when I wash the cup, okay?
Okay, fine.
Oh my goodness. I really enjoyed this. Thank you so much for carving out the time.
Oh no, thank you. I'm so honored that you've had like Jill and Becca on your podcast and then me. I don't compare to them, but I'm so flattered that you asked. Thank you so much.
Oh my goodness. No, I have all walks of our lives on this podcast, and it's so great because these perspectives, and then also it's a very niche thing to be good at this particular thing, you know? You could probably get paid to consult, I'm sure.
I don't know. We'll see. But all we can do is just continue to show up consistently, even when shit is hard. And then, we gain that. We just learn. Make every experience educational. That's all we can do.
I love it. Okay, Anika, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate that.
No, thank you. You go get whatever's in your cup out.
It was only a bead, and I'm not going to drink it because it's bright blue.
Okay, cool. Awesome.
Okay, hold on. You ready to say goodbye to her?
Bye.
Okay, hold on.
Bye.
All right. Thank you so much, Anika, for carving out the time. You are such a busy woman. I am very honored to have had you on. Would you like to say anything, Bean?
Da-da-da-da.
Are you going to say Google Gaga? You're already four. You're a pro podcaster. You can say a full sentence if you want.
Well, we like throwing stuff, me and Mama, and And she bring me to parks and ballet class by when and I play with kids.
Oh, very good. Very good. she's giving me a gigantic hug, you guys. Please honor me with a 5-star rating and a review. It helps so much. Check out Wrap Your Head Around Silks. All the things, rolled out class, a full course, a mini course, aerial rehab course. We have teacher training, and I am working on some retreats and also a performance training online situation for you guys. Okay, I'm gonna go rub your belly here in a second. All right, my friends, over and out. This is Carrie from Wrap Your Head Around Souls. This is the Expecting Aerialist podcast. Oh, kiss, kiss, kiss.